Voters in the 29th State Assembly District have more choices than most when they head to the polls for the November 6th general election. The 29th District contains parts of South, Central, Dunn, and Eastern St. Croix counties and communities including Baldwin, Glenwood City, Menominee, and New Richmond. It's one of only seven assembly races in the state to feature third-party candidates. Since 2006, Republicans have held the seat, but a Democrat and a Libertarian are asking voters this fall to try something new. This hour, we'll talk with all three candidates, hopefully, and we'll find out what they and their parties have to offer voters and what they hope to accomplish if elected. I'm Rich Kramer. This is The West Side. Thank you for joining us this Monday morning here on Ideas 88.3 WHWC and Ideas 88.7 WRFW. With me in the studio, we have two of the three candidates today. First, I'll introduce Rob Stafschult. He is the Republican incumbent from New Richmond. Rob grew up in St. Croix County. He is a business owner and a farmer. Assemblyman Stafschult began his first term representing the 29th District in 2016. Rob Stafschult, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us, Rich.
It's our pleasure to have you. Also in the studio with me is John Calabrese. He is a Democrat who comes to us from Menominee, where he owns a business. He ran this year in the 10th State Senate District special election, in which Democrat Patty Schachner eventually won the seat. John Calabrese, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you, Rich. Good to be here.
Good to have you. And we had also invited Brian Correa. He is a Libertarian candidate from Wilson. We hope that he can still join us, but he has not made it yet. Listeners, we want to hear from you as well. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. What issues are you talking about with your friends and family as we head towards Election Day? And just as importantly, what issues are we not talking about that you think we should be? Let us and the candidates know by calling 800-228-5615. We have open phone lines for you right now. 1-800-228-5615. The first question I always start off is, why? Why are you running? Why do you think you have the credentials to lead the 29th State Assembly District? Rob Stafschult, I'll start with you. You've been in the biz for a while, so to say. Why do you want to run for another term, and what qualifies you?
Well, this was my first term, so after signing in early 2017, you know, you jump right into a multi-billion dollar budget and try to get your feet on the ground, and I truly believe that there's still a lot more good things to happen. I think that with my background as a business owner, a small business owner, a father of a high school girl in public schools, and a farmer, I think I bring a unique perspective and kind of a well-rounded perspective to the office. And hopefully that represents a lot of the people that live in District 29.
Thank you for that. John Calabrese, you've run for state senate, and now you're running for the assembly district in the 29th. Why? And what qualifies you for the job?
Well, it wasn't something I planned on doing, and then that special election popped up, and I decided to give it a shot. And I was really heartened to see the outpouring of support that I had. And while we didn't win that primary, we did really well in Dunn County. And odd timing for an election, that one, but in terms of getting a team together for the assembly run, it was already there at the beginning of the year. So we're going to give this a shot. And in addition to being a woodworker and a construction worker and working with people on the job site all the time, I spent a lot of years trying to get money out of politics, working with a group on a volunteer basis. So I spent a lot of time in Madison speaking with legislators, and I feel like the business community and other communities are very well represented in Madison, and I think having someone who's a paycheck-to-paycheck worker represent people would be something good for the state.
Thank you for that. Listeners, again, you can chime in at 800-228-5615 if you've got a question or comment. So the first question is another very basic and kind of wide-open question, and we like those because you can really get into a candidate's head. What is at stake in this election? And I'll start with you, John Calabrese, and then I'll go to Rob Stafschult.
Okay. Yeah, I think the state has reached a a tipping point, in my opinion, after the last decade. In 2015, there were some campaign finance changes that not only doubled the individual amounts, but opened up campaign committees to receive a lot more money, a lot more donations. And I feel like Wisconsin has become sort of a testing ground for what I view as the biggest problem in the country, and that's the pay-to-play campaign finance money in politics, all the independent expenditures that seem to control the airwaves and make elections a big business, and those people who pour the most money in get the biggest seat at the table. And what I've seen that has happened is a lot of times those people don't care too much about the environment. They don't care too much about workers. And it's a big profit-driven thing that I think is really detrimental to the sustainability of our environment, of our schools. And I think that Wisconsin can do a lot better.
And just to follow up, we heard years ago that in the Supreme Court case, Citizens United, that money equals speech, mm-hmm. and that corporations are people. So what do you say about that? Just following up, I would imagine you're at odds with that.
Yes. And it's been in the works long before Citizens United. The year I was born, in 1976, a couple decisions came down, Buckley v. Vallejo and Bilotti versus the First National Bank of Boston, that equated money with speech and said that corporations can spend money in political campaigns. And so, you can't change the Constitution at the state level, but there were significant changes made in 2015. And since then, spending across the board on both sides has tripled. And I find it hard to believe that those people just like to speak a lot with their money. They are spending so much because they want something in return. And there's things we can do to abate that.
Representative Stafshul, what do you think is at stake in this election?
Well, I think this is a very, very important election. I think, just being the local hometown guy and seeing the way that our families live and the way that, I call it the dinner table discussion. When people come home at night, the things they talk about, whether it's developing workforce so that we have better skilled workers that make more money to bring it home to their kitchen table so that their families strive better, they're more successful. It's the environment. It's clean water. There's a lot of things on the table, and I think that this is an important election that we'll follow up with a lot of that.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a question or a comment, we'd love to hear it. So speaking of environment, I wanted to jump right into some concerns that some have had with regard to the DNR. The one theme that has emerged has to do with water quality, as you mentioned, Representative. And we learned last week that the DNR is still dealing with a backlog in wastewater discharge permit reviews that has to do with, we could talk about municipal sources that have water treatment plants that discharge, or large farms known as concentrated animal feeding operations. So they still have this backlog more than a year after a pretty critical audit found that the agency wasn't either able or willing to follow its own policies. So Representative Stafshul, I'll start with you. Do you think there needs to be changes at the DNR? Because there's a lot of large farms in the district that some people worry could impact water quality. If so, what kind?
Absolutely. I think after firsthand experience in Madison, and you get down there and you learn about all the different agencies that you knew about, but you didn't really understand the inner workings. The DNR as an agency itself is such a huge conglomerate that's charged with so many very important things, from our hunting and fishing rules to, discharges for air quality from corporations to erosion and clean water. I mean, we could talk about all the topics the whole hour. So mm-hmm. I think that there's room for changes at the DNR. I would like to be a part of those changes. I think it's twofold. I think it's number one, when you have an agency that's that big, that it's easy to have regulation after regulation after regulation that tries to fix the problem but doesn't actually always hit the ground. And I think at the same time, we have some very serious protections to create those environmental protections that we need to make sure stay in place and possibly strengthen those, depending on which one of the hundreds of topics we're talking about.
But yeah, you can definitely get lost in the morass, but one of the issues seems to be staffing. There have been a lot of retirements over the years. DNR says it's just with regards to this wastewater issue. in the reviewing of the permits, they say that they're behind because they still have vacancies. And
sure.
So the DNR says it's working. It's making progress on that. Do you think that more DNR needs to hire more water quality specialists or anything like that?
Well, I think sometimes it's if we don't get something done, it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction. Well, we must need more people or must need to do this. I think we really need to step back and take a look at the process for that and figure out if there's inefficiencies in that process that causes us to take longer for each permit application that we could improve without neglecting the resource itself. And I think that's step one. But then step two, if all those processes are efficient and we're doing the things that we need to be doing, then we could look at, you know, what's our personnel and maybe moving people around from a different spot that could do that.
And John Calabrese, your thoughts on, you know, whether or not the DNR is doing a good enough job, I guess, in some of protecting the groundwater in the 29th and elsewhere.
I think that we need to bolster the DNR. I think we do need to hire more people. The most important thing in this state, whether you're talking about business or anything regarding the state, is the environment. There is no economy without clean water and clean air. And it's, I think that the reason that it's fallen apart a little bit and been defunded and been hamstrung on many issues is because there are wealthy interests who don't like to follow rules and regulations, and they like to take local control away from various districts and not allow them to enact their own ordinances because it saves them money, to put it plainly. And the state is really diverse. I've learned a lot over the last couple of years about the geology of the state and, you know, in regards to the lots of manure spills and contaminated water over on the eastern side of the state and why that happens more based on rock formations. And so I think given the diverse nature of this, you know, pretty large state, there need to be different types of DNR agents, and there needs to be a biologist in each of the 72 counties because a lot of the problems that can occur and are occurring are really tough to roll back. And, you know, once the water is contaminated, it's a big deal to try to fix that. And we have to take care of our resources so it's sustainable for future generations.
So it sounds like you're advocating for bolstering, as you mentioned, and more employees. That comes at a cost.
Yeah.
So what do you shift around? Because there's only so many pieces of this pie. How do you find the funding
about,
for that?
It's about it's just about what you want to prioritize. You know, if you follow the WEDC, for example, the Economic Development Corporation, you know, we need economic development and we need to help companies so that they can hire workers. But if you look at some of the big tax breaks given for incentives that oftentimes aren't met for companies that are really profitable anyway, Quick Trip in La Crosse. I like Quick Trip. I shop there. Here they treat their employees well, but they were given a $21 million tax break for their or tax credit for their you know, linked to incentives for a La Crosse business, and there are dozens of those that happen in 2017 alone, and that's not even to mention Foxconn. So if we can re-examine that, and the other thing that's tied to that is if you follow the money, if you see the companies that are getting those tax breaks, a lot of times they're big donors to the party, and if we had a more level playing field, if we lessened that influence, then there would be money that could be shifted around to protect our natural resources.
Thank you for that, both of you. With that, I'm reminding our listeners that we're speaking with the candidates running for the 29th State Assembly District seat. In the studio with me today are Rob Stafschult. He is the Republican incumbent from New Richmond. And John Calabrese is in the studio with me as well. He's the Democratic challenger from Menominee. We were hoping to have Brian Correa, the Libertarian candidate, but he was unable to attend, it seems. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. I think this program works best when voters in the district and outside of the district are able to give direct feedback to the folks hoping to represent them. So don't be bashful. 1-800-228-5615. Staying on the environmental trend, we've got a call from Willem in Colfax. Willem, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, as I'm concerned about the growth of the frac sand mining industry and what that means to the future of our state, these changes that this industry is making to our state are unprecedented and irreversible. They're literally changing the landscape of our state, and this is happening very rapidly. And what I'm concerned about is how that affects the rest of the economy. I don't think that it's an attractive feature to have strip mining be part of the state. If you're trying to attract young people, why would you want to raise your family in an area of strip mining? There are some jobs that are created in the setting up of the mines, but even according to their own industry magazine, they're moving toward automation. So once they're established, they can run with very few employees, but yet they have a very big impact. An example is in a study, it shows that the surrounding properties around these strip mines and sand mines, their property values are decreased by 25%. And what I'd like to ask the incumbent representative is it fair that someone, not one of my neighbors or some of my neighbors, profit from leasing their land to these mining companies at the expense of other neighbors whose property is decreased by 25%? All right. That doesn't seem fair to me. And the last thing I wanted to say was, does the incumbent take money from the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association?
Willem, thank you so much for the question and for the call, 1-800-228-5615, if others have questions or comments for the candidates. So, Rob Staffschultz, since you're the incumbent, that question was definitely directed to you. we'll start with you. It's the never-ending balance between, you know, jobs, economy, and environment. So what would you tell Willem?
Well, I actually agree with Willem very, very much. I've been a property rights advocate for a long, long time. But one of the things I say is that if you legally own, if you legally own your property and have acquired it and paid for it and paid the taxes, that you should be able to do, you should have rights to do what you want to do with your land. Now, the caveat to that is so long as it doesn't incur a health or safety or loss of value to your neighbors. So I agree that there's an issue there that if somebody comes in and buys 80 acres surrounded by a bunch of 40s, that those other 40s are going to be devalued. And I think what we've seen in the frac sand industry is that those folks are trying to address that. I will also add that right at the end of the session, there was some pro-frac sand initiatives that were trying to come through. And myself and actually Warren Petrick to the south of us here and a few others really had some concerns about whether or not that had been reviewed enough and the public had their input. So that actually did not go forward, and I was part of the people that made sure that that didn't.
Are you talking about they would have been exempted from certain local regulations and it would have been the state that permitted them?
Well, there were certain regulations, but one of the biggest things was a 24-hour ability to mine for 24 hours around the clock and other
without exception.
Without exception, and some other local control things that, honestly, those ideas were just not vetted well enough yet. It kind of got thrown in right at the last minute there, and those are some of the things that I don't think we should be doing. So I anticipate that'll probably come back next time, but hopefully it'll be vetted better and everybody can have their say.
And then Willem's other question, have you received any money in your campaign from the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association or members?
I honestly don't know. I really honestly don't know.
All right. John Calabrese, what would you tell Willem and other people that are concerned about the environmental impacts, property values related to sand mining?
Well, I think that, as you stated and as Representative Staffschultz stated, we need to find that balance. But, you know, if you drive around the state, you see more and more sand mines, and it's not just the mine. It's not just taking down the hill. It's all the infrastructure that goes along with it. It's those big trucks breaking up the roads because they're on them all the time. And for me, it's sand. It's not oil and gas, but it is part of what I consider to be a dying industry, which is the fossil fuel industry. And I'm not naive enough to think that we could immediately shift to renewables. There has to be some transition time, but we have to know what this sand is going to and consider that when we push forward to, you know, give more mining permits. And you know, we could lead the way in instead of something that takes away the land, something that becomes more sustainable, and investing some of our time and dollars into renewable energies instead.
And let's take one more call before we take our break. Dan in Birchwood, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm a resort owner up here in Birchwood, so following that environmental theme, we're at the something that's on our mind a lot because the environment is what gets us people. So right now we're sending about $15 billion out of the state to buy coal, oil, and natural gas that Wisconsin doesn't have any of these things. So those dollars are creating jobs in Texas and North Dakota and Wyoming. And we could be spending that money here in Wisconsin, creating good-paying blue-collar jobs that put people to work installing solar and manufacturing wind turbines and such. So, and at the same time, we're already seeing the impact of climate change here with the flooding that's going on and our shortened winters, which in the tourism industry, if you don't have snow, what are people coming up here in the wintertime for? And we're seeing fewer cold water fish, such as trout and walleye. And so we're seeing those impacts of climate change already. And so my question for the candidates is, if you're elected, what are your plans to reduce our climate impact and at the same time put people to work in good-paying jobs that are blue-collar and can't be outsourced and that will contribute to cleaner air and water and environment in general?
Dan, thanks so much for the question. I'm going to start with John Calabrese on this one.
Well, thanks, Dan. You know, as with most things, it's about shifting priorities. And when you have a DNR that is not allowed to use the term climate change and they're supposed to be researching what is best for the state going forward, then that's a big problem. And so we have to first acknowledge the problem and acknowledge what's going on and work towards things to mitigate it. And it is in a financial job aspect. We can lead the way in solar installation and in wind farms. And it's a lot of shifting priorities. And like I said in the earlier statement, you can't just immediately move to renewables. You have to be sensible about it and understand that the fossil fuel industry is a big one. A lot of people are employed there, but we have all sorts of programs and seemingly money available for trying to draw workers in from other states. Millions of dollars set aside for that, so we can help fund retraining for people who are in fossil fuel jobs or in the sand industry or trying to attract the newest technologies. But we first need to acknowledge that there's a problem. We need to, instead of getting rid of air quality monitors like has happened in the last couple of years, instead of paving the way for more wetlands to be filled in, which work to mitigate flooding, we need to put a halt to that and see what's going on first and try to remedy it with science-based forward-thinking priorities.
If I could follow up, Wisconsin had a plan for utilities to get 20%, I think, of their energy from renewable sources by 2020 or 2025. We're ahead of that. The Xcel Energy, for one, is well ahead of that. So is there a step two to that? Do you think we need to just continue increasing the percentage or have other requirements for?
Well, you know, I think the good thing about renewable energy is that it's becoming profitable and it's becoming less expensive to install, and so the industry itself is shifting in that direction. But I think there are other incentives that we can add to draw more of those businesses here than we have.
Thank you for that. Rob Stafshall, what would you tell Dan up in Birchwood?
Well, I think last week was a real eye-opening experience for me. I got to be part of the Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum, and it was located actually in Hammond right here in our district and in Assembly District 29, where we talked about renewable energies and how far they've come, not just in the last 20 years, but the last 10 and even the last 5, because part of the problem with renewable energies is they required subsidies, something that, you know, usually as a fiscally conservative person, I'm not always for. And some of those subsidies on the federal level are going to run out, I believe, on wind, and don't hold me this, I think 2019 that subsidy runs out, and I don't see that program getting renewed. And I think in 2020 is solar, and I don't know that either one of those will probably be renewed. And part of the reason why is because it's super exciting. The technology has come so far, as John pointed out, that we used to have like a 27-year payback for a solar panel farm. It didn't really matter the size because the cost inputs are the same across the square footage, but about a 27-year payback. And then it went down to like 17 or 16, something like that. And now in the last few years, we've been under 10. So we can viably use solar energy. St. Croix Electric Cooperative, along with many other cooperatives and folks, are putting solar farms out. They have one right on their facility, which is relatively small in comparison to some other ones. And then we went out and toured one which covers almost 20 acres between Hammond and Roberts.
Hmm.
Great facility, state-of-the-art. But one of the things we talked about was how much energy can we expect to get out of renewable energy sources like this? And the answer is we can build it big enough to probably hold the grid, the power grid, the requirements. But there'll be snow days. There'll be kind of dark, gloomy days. And there'll be other days where we don't get that power. So we'll always probably, I think, still have to have some kind of fossil fuel backup. But I think it's really amazing some of the things we're going towards, and I support all those initiatives to try to do renewable energies as long as they're cost-effective and don't require taxpayer subsidies.
When you mentioned wind, it kind of jogged my memory because there was a battle, and I'm not sure if it's exactly in the 29th or not, but in the town of Emerald and Cylon, there was a big controversy because a lot of the people didn't want this large, I think 40-some turbines that are 500 feet tall, you know, significant. Mm-hmm. They were worried about the noise possibilities, the flickering, you know, all these impacts on wildlife. And it sounded like they just didn't want it there. But the same people also understand, you know, renewable energy is something that might be needed. So there have been changes to the law with regard to setbacks for how far away. That's been extended, so that kind of limits where they can be placed. So what do you tell residents, you know, how do you sell renewable energy to residents who might not want a large turbine farm nearby?
Well, and I think it's not today we're going to decide that we're going to do renewable energies and that's it. I think it's part of a process, and unfortunately I think that somewhat heated battle between neighbors and friends in Forest Township is part of that process, because I think you need to figure out, okay, well, we want renewable energies, but I don't want to see a big 500-foot tower on the property border 15 foot from my yard. So I think it's part of the process to go through that and hear both sides and try to figure out what the best solution is. And usually it's a compromise. Usually I find in politics so far that if you have something where not everybody's 100% happy with the outcome, then it's probably a pretty fair compromise. So incidentally, in Forest, those wind turbines are still not up there, and the local folks didn't want them. So
yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, and as far as I know, the project is still in the works. I don't think it's officially been called off. John Calabrese, what would you tell residents that might be against something huge going up in their backyard for, you know, to help us transition from fossil fuels?
Well, on the one hand, I find it concerning that, you know, in the last 10 years, I think I saw something like over 100 ordinances and laws have been passed in Madison to take away the ability of localities to make their own decisions, and including conditional use permits, shoreline ordinances, all sorts of things. So I want communities to be able to make their own decisions on what they feel is best for them, and more that's not happening. But when it comes to renewable energy and the what people might see as unsightly turbines, you know, I think it's a larger shift in culture and you know, reminding people of the incentives of what it can mean for the sustainability of their power grid and the cost of the energy that they're buying. I mean, you look at some of these massive electric poles that are still going up and down the corridors. Those things are huge and unsightly, but people a lot of people don't see them, and even the telephone poles around cities. It's just part of our everyday life. And I think if it happens enough in areas that maybe aren't so populated or not right in a residential area, then people start to hear about and read about the benefits of it. Then you know it'll slowly start to shift. But you have to be gentle with people. You have to make sure that locales have the ability to make their own rules, and then just keep pushing the narrative forward.
With that, you're listening to the 29th State Assembly District Candidate Debate on Wisconsin Public Radio's West Side. The listeners in South Central Dunn and Eastern St. Croix counties, this is your district. The district includes communities like Baldwin, Glenwood City, Hammond, Menominee, New Richmond, and many more. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by two of the three candidates in that race, the November general election. I'm joined by Robert Stafschuld. He is the Republican incumbent, and John Calabrese, the Democratic challenger. Not with us today is Brian Correa, who is the Libertarian running in that race. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got questions or comments, we've got one caller on the line. We'll get to you after the break. This is the West Side.
Support for WPR comes from Roth Cheese, with snack cheese available in creamy cheddar, creamy gouda, or whole milk mozzarella. Made in Wisconsin and available at grocers throughout the state. Locations are at rothcheese.com. Support also comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering the West Check debit card, allowing 24/7 ATM access to funds, where purchases are automatically deducted from a checking account. WisconsinCU.org.
Seven state assembly districts have more than two parties on the ballot, and the 29th district is one of them. Today we are talking with two of the three general election candidates facing off on November 6th. In the studio, we have incumbent Republican Robert Stafschuld of New Richmond and Democratic challenger John Calabrese of Menominee. Not with us today is Brian Correa. He is the Libertarian candidate. He is from Wilson. We have not heard from him as of yet, but if he's listening and wants to join in, give us a call at 800-228-5615. We do have another caller that must have heard us talking about subsidies, so they jumped on the line. Let's go to Matthew in St. Croix Falls.
Matthew. Hey, Rich, thanks for the platform. I'll make this brief. This is for the incumbent. I heard you bring up subsidies. I'm just curious where you stand on subsidies for the oil industry. I'm curious where you stand on subsidies for Foxconn, Walmart, and the Bucks Stadium, and farmers. We could go there, too. You're a farmer. I'm sure you get a tax break. I'm an independent contractor. I get raked through the coals. I work for two people, my wife and my one-and-a-half-year-old child. I'm sick and tired of watching the right wing take money from the working class Americans in this country and give it to the wealthy. What do you have to say? I'll take my answer off the air.
Matthew, thank you so much. I appreciate it. So as for subsidies for other industries, including agriculture, I mean, they're all over the place. What's your response to the caller?
Well, in general, I'm against subsidies unilaterally across the board, which doesn't always sit well in my caucus. I think there's a time and a place for a subsidy or promotion or a tax break for promotion or industry promotion. But I think in general, I'm a pretty fiscally conservative guy, and I think that if it doesn't stand on its own merit, that I have a hard time with subsidies. I do understand their necessity sometimes, but my hat goes off to him. If he's a small business owner and he's working for himself and trying to provide for his family, that's the epitome of the kind of people that I want to represent.
So as for Foxconn, you know, there's different – people call it different things. Some call it an incentive, tax breaks, et cetera. Is it a subsidy or is that different?
I don't believe it is a subsidy. And I'll just tell you, in my year and a half of being the state representative, that was probably the toughest vote I took. And the way I got to be a yes on that vote, because I did vote for it, was because it's a kind of a tax break as they go. So it's a measure of – if we provide X amount of jobs, then you get X tax break. It's not a blanket statement. We don't actually write a check and send a check. It's a tax break, but they have to prove themselves. They actually have to provide the jobs. They have to hit benchmarks and earmarks, or they don't get a dime.
John Calabrese, what do you say? What do you tell Matthew in St. Croix Falls with regard to subsidies at the state level, federal level?
Mm-hmm. I think Matthew's right on, and I've tracked the flow of money in politics for the last decade, and it is corporate welfare that's handed out to the well-connected people at the national and at the state level. And you can draw a direct line to most of the companies that get these tax breaks and incentives and subsidies to how much money they pour into politics. And it's just that simple. And I know when you talk to people about money in politics, it's a common concern, and people know that it's a problem, but I don't think people understand the depth to which it is a problem. And, you know, every couple of years, it seems like the legislature is adamant to go after what they call welfare reform. And it never seems to get fixed because it works as a great tool at election time to divide people and people to get votes. The current administration likes to pit people against one another, and it's been borne out by how things go, and it's usually pitting people like the caller or attempting to against people who are poorer or people who need some help in life and in this system, when in fact, and I think he understands this, the caller, the real welfare frauds are the corporate welfare frauds who take so much more money, and they get it because of the influence that they leverage with the money that they pour in.
With regard to Foxconn, the idea is that after, I don't know, 20 years or so, more than that, I think, that it will be paid back and that the company would theoretically continue to grow and it would be a net benefit for the state economically. Don't you buy that argument?
I don't buy that argument. I think it's far too much money to be giving to one, you know, multinational conglomerate when this state is dead last in new business startups for the last 2 years. Wages, when adjusted for inflation, are pretty stagnant. 500 small farms have closed. There is a lot of ways to spread that money out and offer incentives to other people to keep the tourism industry going, to keep the heritage of this state going. And the company itself has proven over and over again to be not very trustworthy. I mean, just last week they shifted around some thinking on some things in an article that I read. And trying to put all your eggs in one massive basket like that is sucking everything from other parts of the state. There's a general purpose tax fund. And in addition, after the deal was done, they got an extra tens of millions of dollars for road projects down there when, you know, people in this district know how the roads are around here. And we have to prioritize everybody equally, not just the well-connected big companies.
Just before the break, Rob Stafschild, would you like to throw anything in?
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly important point, is that, I've seen 23 or 27-year return on that investment for the state, and I think that is an incredibly long time. That was one of the things that concerned me the most, was how long, and then with technology being what it is, 27 years from now or 20 or even 15 years from now is a long time. What's that going to look like? So that was one of my biggest concerns. And then John brings up a point about like money in roads and the money that gets spent down there. One of the things I've battled ever since I've been in office is on our road funding and trying to get more of the general road funding budget for the state up here. And it's just a simple matter of demographics, right? There's more representatives that help decide where the money goes congregated to the southeast corner of the state, or at least the south half of the state, I'll say, mm-hmm. where when you get up here in rural areas, we're asking for our share of the money, but you can serve more people in a smaller area if you spend the same $10 million down there as what you do up here. And that's just been an ongoing challenge that I've battled, is trying to get our fair share back up here to serve our people.
A numbers game for sure. There are 71 days left for voters before they go to the polls in the 29th State Assembly District to elect their representative. I'm Rich Kramer, and today on the West Side, we're speaking with two of the three candidates on the ballot in the 29th State Assembly District. They are Brian Correa. He's the I need to amend my script. John Calabrese is the Democrat in the race. He's from Menominee, and Rob Stafschild is the Republican incumbent. He is from New Richmond. Not with us is Brian Correa, Libertarian from Wilson. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. We still have time to get some more questions on the air from you. 1-800-228-5615. We'll be back in just a bit. This is The West Side.
Every day on Central Time, we celebrate life in Wisconsin and what our state has given to the nation and the world. From Georgia O'Keeffe to Les Paul, we learn about Wisconsinites past and present who have made their mark. Tune into Central Time for a look at the people who make our state a great place to call home. Weekday afternoons from 3 until 7 or online anytime at WPR.org.
Support for WPR comes from Wasco Windows, manufacturing and installing high-performance replacement windows and doors for the Wisconsin climate. Locations throughout southeast Wisconsin and the Fox Valley, and online at wascowindows.com.
Chapel Heights United Methodist Church in Eau Claire invites the community to their 50-year celebration Sunday, September 9th. The celebration includes a 10 a.m. worship service, free lunch, music entertainment, children's activities, and more. The congregation is on East Hamilton Avenue in Eau Claire.
Wisconsin Public Radio has provided voters access to their legislative candidates through on-air discussions for more than 20 years. Our goal is to engage you, the listener, present candidates a platform to share their positions on important issues, and give you a chance to call in and ask them direct questions. I'm Rich Kramer. We continue that decades-long service today on the West Side as we talk with the candidates running in the 29th State Assembly District race. They face off in November. During the November 6th general election. In studio with me today are two of the three candidates on the ballot. Rob Stafsholt is the Republican incumbent from New Richmond, and John Calabrese is the Democratic challenger from Menominee. Brian Correa is the Libertarian in the election. He's from Wilson. He was not able to join us today. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. We have wide-open phone lines right now. Rob Stafsholt, I'll go to you with this next question, then we'll go to John Calabrese. Wisconsin has said, and it's been reported all over the place, that we're in the midst of a drug epidemic. In some parts of the state, it's heroin, big problem. It's really interesting how there are pockets of these different types of drugs, but the two main scourges are heroin and methamphetamine. They've become a major drain on local law enforcement services and social service departments. Some counties, I think Ashland County, way up to the north, they're looking at a referendum to raise money just to deal with the increased load on social services. So, the state lawmakers have passed a number of bills as part of the HOPE agenda, which focuses on opioids and prescription painkillers, heroin. Are we doing enough, or do you think there needs to be more work? And if so, what kind of steps would you like to see?
Well, there's definitely more work to be done. And I'll just say that John Nygren championed the HOPE agenda, which is a package of bills. And one of the neatest things that was kind of a revelation is when I got down there, we're working on the HOPE agenda, and it was all about opioids. And I talked with John and said, in my district, our issue is meth. Mm-hmm. And some of these bills, not that you're excluding the meth problem, but they're focused on something else. And the language is always technicalities in legal language, but it kind of made a problem for us up here because we couldn't use some of those. So John was great, and he added in different language so that it was kind of more broad spectrum. And he just, they don't have as much meth use where he's from, and mm-hmm. we don't have as much heroin here. So it's really interesting as I get to meet people from all the different sides of the state, how we often have a common problem, but the actual symptoms are a little different, sure. different drug of choice.
Sure.
One of the things I've done is talk to both sheriff's departments, but and we've gone in length that, the methamphetamine problem is so encompassing of so many more things. It's not just, okay, well, so-and-so did drugs and now we have a problem with that individual person. I mean, it increases the crime rates. It increases the mental health aspect, which is a huge, huge drain on our local economies and our local budgets for county services. I've worked extensively and gone to meeting after meeting after meeting on how we treat our Chapter 51 mental detention folks. It's actually horrible. We put them in a squad car in handcuffs oftentimes and haul them all the way to Winnebago. It's a five-hour car ride. They've always been detained for a couple hours prior before they even get in the vehicle, and then it's at least a five-hour car ride. If they have to stop for the bathroom, oftentimes we have to stop at a jail and not just a gas station. So it's for someone that's in that state of mental distress, I think that's horrid that we're doing that, and I've been committed to make sure that we do that better. And a lot of that ties right back into the meth. I mean, it's a common, it's not always, but there's a lot of meth use that leads to mental situations. It leads to theft. It leads to all kinds of different things. So we have a lot of work to do there yet, and I'm committed to help doing that.
Is it a simple answer, more resources? Are we talking? Because that seems to be, whenever I have these conversations with lawmakers, the first, and it seems like the only answer is more money or
right.
or more legislation, more government action. Is it that simple?
It's always more something, right?
Yeah, it's always more.
Well, I think it is more money, but I think that the money needs to be specifically targeted. So I think you can just say, well, let's just throw money into the agency and see what happens. But I think what I like is these smaller pilot programs that we're doing on a very confined demographic area that specifically address one issue or one topic, or the drug courts that we're using, certain task force that are, you know, Senator Harsdorf and Adam Jarko actually passed a task force through for the northwestern part. Doesn't quite hit most of this district, but a little bit north of here. I think those are things that you can't be afraid to fail, which is always a concern in politics. If you try something, it doesn't fail, you know, it's a problem. But I think if you spend $1 million on something and figure out, okay, well, that didn't work, that's good knowledge to have, because then you can spend $1 million on something else and know that, okay, that doesn't work, let's try something different. And I think that's what we need to do, is keep trying things till we find the things that work.
John Calabrese, you know, what's your perspective on the issue with regard to the meth use in the district, also heroin use in the district? Is it about resources? Do you think the state needs to do more, or are we on the right track?
I think it is about resources, but it's also a real telling of about the times that we're living in, and it's a national issue and it's a state issue. But we've got, you know, greater wealth inequality than before the Great Depression. 60% of some numbers I see of people in this country can't survive a $1,000 emergency. Kids are saddled with student debt. You know, things are really tough out there. And then you've seen in the correlation a spike in suicides and a spike in drug use. And it's a desperation that people feel. It's a normal avenue for people to go down when life is tough. And so I think that, yes, we need to work with experts in the field, mental health experts, people who know the districts well, the particular drug problem that is happening in those districts. We need to start at the school age level. I went to a forum for the Dunn County Sheriffs a couple weeks ago, and one of the fellows who made it through the primary has done a lot of work in schools. And it's not necessarily to scare kids about law enforcement or jail time. It's to understand what happens out there in life and to prepare them to make better decisions. But I think if we have a government federally and statewide who really works for every person equally, then a lot of the problems that lead to the desperation that ends up with drug use and all that comes from it can be abated, you know, or at least assisted. And it's something that, as Representative Stafford said, you know, we got to keep working at.
This is one topic that I was really hoping to have Libertarian candidate Brian Correa in the studio with us on, because, you know, the Libertarian philosophy, and it's not, I don't mean to speak for them, but a lot of times it's, you know, legalization or just let people make their own choices, you know, self-determination. So I'll go to John Calabrese and then I'll go to Rob Stafford. This brings up, you know, the whole idea of marijuana. And some people say that these other drug, you know, epidemics would kind of ease off a little bit if people had access to marijuana in the same way that they have access to, you know, alcohol. Do you buy that argument? Do you think the state should go towards legalization of marijuana?
You know, I do think the state should go towards legalization, but I don't necessarily buy the argument that would lessen dramatically the use of other drugs, because mm-hmm. it's a totally different animal. I think that legalizing marijuana makes sense financially. There's a lot of tax revenue you could get from it. I have read and do believe that it could lessen alcohol use, which is a huge problem, and you know,
doesn't get a lot of attention either.
That's right, and because it's a part of our culture. You know, our baseball team is named for beer. You know, and it's just the way it is, and that's okay. And we expect people to be responsible, and you know, we have rules and laws in place for that. But alcohol is so much more addictive, so much more dangerous. You can, you know, it leads to a lot more problems than marijuana ever has been proven to. And so I do think we need to go in that direction, but I don't think that that would necessarily stop the desperation and the business that comes with the other illicit drugs. And we need to address those too.
Rob Stafschel, your thoughts on marijuana and legalization?
Oh, the marijuana issue is an extremely interesting debate, because I think you have about four or five different groups in there, and the folks that come from a medical background, I get. I mean, my mom was sick of cancer and passed away when I was in high school, so I've seen that kind of thing and what it does to a family. I understand that. That's why I supported some of the right to try type legislation that we did. But I also think that transferring some of the problems that we have with alcoholism in this district or this state to a different drug, I don't know that scientifically that says that automatically if you have an issue with alcohol and you go to marijuana, that you automatically have an issue with marijuana. I don't know that the science is there yet. Probably my biggest concern that I have is when I talk to law enforcement is the ability to know when a driver is impaired. And I think we don't have the technology yet. I think we're getting closer, my understanding is, and I'm not an expert in that field, but if you're drinking and we drive down the road and we give you a field sobriety test, you can bromobutherize and we can tell you what your blood alcohol content is. With THC for marijuana, that's not necessarily the case. We don't really have a field sobriety test for that. And one of my concerns is, how do we protect our kids that are riding down the road in the other lane? And how do we know what level that person is? Are they at a legal level and a responsible level, or are they not? So that would be something that I think we'd have to find an answer to before I'd be comfortable with that.
With that, I wish we had more time, but I wanted to thank our candidates running for the 29th State Assembly District that were on the program today. Robert Stafschult is the Republican incumbent from New Richmond, and John Calabrese is the Democratic challenger from Menominee. Brian Correa is Libertarian. He was not able to join us today, but he will be on the ballot. Thank you to both of you very much for participating today. Also, many thanks to our callers and listeners. We had some good stuff. And Team Westside, thank you for helping produce this program. Catherine Thomas, Mort Cypress, Cora Lang, Kate Springer, and Dean Kallenbeck, you are the best. After a week off for Labor Day, we return Monday, September 10th, to talk with Jody Emerson and Echo Reardon. They're running for the 91st Assembly District. Until then, have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again September 10th.